What is your second favorite breakfast cereal?
Second favorite.
Skip the take that first one, throw it in the garbage.
I feel like in order to think about this, so I have you to go through number one.
Don't even think about it.
Can't go through number one?
If you don't already have a list of your top two breakfast cereals, which is the shortest list possible.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 247 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm wistfully looking around.
I'm Sam.
This is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is for Brewery 20 Blunt. 20 Blundy.
This is another end of day podcast recording.
End of week and end of day.
Yeah.
Morning.
Or should we say end of strong?
Yes,
it was a warning out there, it was a strong this week.
No, it was a week this strong.
It wasn't weak at all.
Warning, profanity. We've got it. We'd also like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. We got a new one.
We got a hot one on the line.
Jerry McBain says, "Brothers of Scotch, I'm headed to GDC from New Zealand."
Ooh, that's a long way.
That's a long flight.
Yeah,
he's probably in the air right now.
Yeah,
yeah. But, could be.
But also there's a time zone difference, so he might already be at GDC.
He might be there yesterday.
Yeah.
But GDC is 2 hours behind us, which means GDC could have already happened.
It's also a month from now. What?
Oh, carry on.
All right. Anyways, Jerry McBain is coming from New Zealand to represent Dinosaur Polo Club, creators of Mini Metro and Mini Motorways. I'd love to catch up with y'all and talk subscription services, game launches, and back pain. If you're keen, hit me up.
We're keen.
I'm keen. I'm mad keen.
I think I'm a bit dull.
Wait, how do we hit them up?
They left the email.
They left their email address, which we are not going to read on the air.
I think we reached out to them last summer at GDC as part of our here's a huge list of people. Let's email all of them.
Did they get back to us?
They did not.
Mm.
I see.
Well, opportunity blown. It's
little
over
delayed.
Now. They're trying to buy their way back in.
Hey, I'll take it.
And it's working.
They didn't email after the show.
I wish all 300 people that didn't respond to us paid us to talk to us.
Yeah, we're playing the long game.
Mm-hmm.
We'd also like to thank our recurring
supporters.
Sorry, my tongue is.
Get it under control.
Yeah. Let's talk about Puck Phone.
Puck Phones. Are they the future? Yes or no?
What's a Puck Phone?
Okay. Well, so we've been having this
Puck Phone.
We've been having a lively debate for the better part of a year now because Seth got an Android watch, which, by the way,
it's a Puck Phone.
It's a Puck Phone because it's circular. It's a Puck.
What's a Puck?
Which is something that Seth has joked about in the past when we're talking about the rounder corners of phones that keep getting rounder and rounder and getting more and more holes punched in them and all this stuff.
It's just going to be
and
a
the
puck.
End result, the joke was, it's going to be a Puck Phone.
There's going to be a Puck Phone that's a screen, a circular screen on top, circular screen on bottom, and then a long screen wrapped around the outside.
And then we realized we're, I guess, now a third of the way there just because of smartwatches.
Yep. So Seth's got a Puck Phone on his wrist. And then we realized by saying the word Puck Phone a couple times that it is probably the funniest puck technical jargon. Because it sounds like you're swearing at someone. Because of the phonemes.
All right, get over here, you Puck Phone.
We gotta talk about it.
And then we also realized, because we were calling each other bottlenecks in another context earlier today.
That sounds like a good slam, too.
Calling someone a bottleneck, beautiful. Beautiful, rude way to talk to your colleagues.
And Puck Phone Bottleneck sounds like a good news anchor name.
Hello, I'm Puck Phone Bottleneck.
To you, Scam Likely.
Yeah, Scam Likely.
Scam Likely. The weather. Been calling all of us quite a bit. I'm sure our listeners also get calls from Scam.
Scam Likely.
Never picked up. I don't know what Scam wants, but maybe one day we'll find out.
Mostly scams, I think.
Probably. Scam. Okay, so let's talk about the studio. We are burned.
Mm-hmm.
So burned?
We're burned. We're on fire.
Just on, like,
things are happening really fast.
I did
really
burn my
fast.
Finger on coffee today.
Okay.
That was incredible. I was standing there and I saw Adam go to grab his cup. I don't know what happened. The robots filled it. They were rebelling.
In our office, we've got this shared, you know, kitchen space thing with these fancy, very tall robots. I guess they don't look like robots. They look like vending.
They're basically – they look like refrigerators.
They look like refrigerators, but they shoot coffee out, right?
So they're the opposite of a refrigerator.
Yes. They shoot hot liquid out. Yeah. They shoot, hot liquid out instead of holding cold things inside. Yeah. So these things just make coffee on the fly for you, which is great, except they're broken roughly a third of the time.
I think it's apparently the volume that they get.
Yeah. I was thinking, but yeah, there's probably like 200 people in this building at least. And probably at least half of them are drinking.
There's 200 companies in this building.
No way. That can't be right. Yeah. No way.
Although some companies are one person.
And you walk down the – because there's three floors. Remember, we only ever see two floors. Uh-huh. There's like 100 people just upstairs.
But they're in one
That's
company.
One company though.
Yeah.
Which means the other 199 companies are on the other two floors.
crazy.
But anyway. Wild time. But neither here nor there.
It's upstairs.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you got these machines that shoot hot liquid, right? And because they're breaking all the time and being repaired all the time, they have a random amount of volume dispensed, it turns out.
I feel like it mainly hits you though. I've actually never had a problem with this.
Well, Adam's cup is exactly 12 ounces.
Yeah. And so normally I go for 10 ounces.
So his volume decision.
Because you can choose 8, 10, or 12. So I always go for 10 because that's always safe. But then recently 10 like only – it filled up just a little trickle. And so I have been using 12 now for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Then today.
Today.
Today 12 filled it to the – like you know how when you get liquid all the way to the top of a thing, it starts to come higher even? You get that meniscus, inverted meniscus bubble. Thing going? Mm-hmm. So it was doing that. But I didn't
–
got the surface tension. But I didn't actually look at it because it's a habit. So I just grabbed it. And then went to walk away.
Pop that meniscus bubble.
Yeah, the meniscus bubble threw burning hot lava all over my hands. Mm-hmm. So speaking of
you got burned.
I got burned for real today.
Yeah. So we've just been on fire and on boil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It depends.
Adam's hand specifically. we've been – so we're in sort of the pre-launch phase for Levelhead. So what that means is that –
We're just auditing everything.
Yeah. It's just like how is this not good and can we not – be doing whatever is making it not good. And so
the game.
Yeah. And so it's required a ton of work and rework. But it's also very fun because it's one of those funny things where, especially during early access, you know, you're trying to cram in features constantly to make everybody happy. Mm-hmm. But then you realize
operating on one platform.
Yes. And then, you know, you realize in our case, for our launch, it is a multi-form factor launch, right? Mm-hmm. You got touch screens, you got Joy-Cons, you got regular controllers, you got keyboards. And so we have to make sure it works well on all those things. Control for all the stupid instances of things not working well.
Yeah, then you got one player, two player, three player.
Yep, all that stuff. And so basically we're just sort of cleaning house on a bunch of things. It's very exciting. I'm really having a good time.
Because our number of cards on the Trello board is decreasing because we're essentially on a suggestion freeze. Mm-hmm. Right, so we are anything that is just coming in from the outside. That's like one of those statements.
It would be nice.
Yeah, starts with either it would be cool if or it would be nice if.
Yes,
delete it.
Yep.
And also for certain people who provide feedback, it should because they actually mean it would be nice if. But
yes,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. We read it the other way.
Yes.
Yeah. So we are essentially looking purely at, or we're asking the question of, what could get in the way between this game and a really good launch?
Yes.
Right? And we're just going down that list and solving all the problems.
And here's a fun one. So we played it on the Switch. And this is when we did our new player audit. I think it's one of those funny things where, you know, we've been building the game. It's actually been playable on the Switch for months now, basically, while we began it through cert. But I hadn't actually taken it for a spin. And I don't think any of us had, like, sat down with it and said, like, how does it actually feel?
I have, because I developed it on the Switch.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So Seth sure got to, but I haven't gotten to take a crack at it. And so I just had the Switch and was playing around on it and realized that it's very hard to do certain moves because the Switch's joystick is directly below the buttons on the right side. And so usually the joystick is actually offset to the left a little bit, which is always weirding me out because it makes controllers look kind of dumb. Mm-hmm. They're sort of weirdly asymmetrical.
But of course, that keeps it out of the way of your thumb.
Turns out. So yeah, without that offset, then you end up in a situation where when you try to press one of the buttons or multiple of the buttons, and you end up slapping the joystick a little bit. And so it's all these little things where it prompts these discussions like, okay, what if we change these controller rebinds, even the ability to actually rebind keys, all sorts of stuff like that, that then end up solving almost in a weird cascading way other problems that have been sitting there for a while. Stuff like the fact that multiplayer – people popping in and out of multiplayer destroys your progress and levels sometimes and some other stuff. And so, yeah, there's just a lot of like really fun – I'm enjoying it a lot. It's like a lot of fun cleanup going on.
Yeah, and stuff like, you know, we have to prepare the game for marketing. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we have to do in marketing is screenshots. However,
lots of screenshots.
However,
yes.
The game is in.
Let's talk about screenshots real quick.
Okay.
Because tell them about the Crashlands experience we had back in the day.
What happened?
I can't just even remember.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because with Crashlands, we launched on Steam, iOS, and Android at the same time. And iOS has multiple different dimensions of screenshots because they reasonably want the game to look good in a screenshot that matches the device. So if you're on an iPad, you should see how the game looks on an iPad when you open the screenshot.
As a square, basically.
Yeah. Because, if you open up a screenshot on an iPad and it's like a weird, long, tiny thing as if it was on an iPhone, then you're like, how would this look on my iPad? Right. You don't know. So I think that's a totally fair stance to take, but it does mean that every screenshot actually needs three different aspect ratios just for iOS. Then you can hopefully maybe one of those fits for Google Play and for Steam. But now here we are also looking at Switch
and
Xbox.
And
Puck phones. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's our big announcement. We're launching our own Puck phone, and Levelhead's the first game on it.
There you go.
So that by itself creates a problem because this is your classic tooling problem, which is you could just do this by hand, which is what we did with Crashlands. But now we're looking at this with Levelhead, and we're staring down the barrel of not only, six platforms, but 11 languages on six platforms, right?
And localized store pages always perform better than non-localized ones.
Yep.
So
– which makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. So now you have this problem where it's like, okay, so Levelhead currently is in 10 languages?
11
languages.
Including English, yeah.
And then you have like 8 resolutions.
Right, you need to take the platforms, same picture. But several of them have multiple aspect ratios.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So,
every screenshot we take, we need 88 versions of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
88.
Yep.
Okay.
And it would have been a lot worse, except we took away all the things that indicate what kind of form factor you're on for input.
Correct.
So we just hid all the input things
so
that we don't have to show Xbox controls versus Switch controls.
We just don't show any.
Versus keyboard controls. So we just showed none, because otherwise we'd have 4 more. So to take that 88 or whatever times 4 to actually cover every fucking case, which is –
and then just scream and cry for a week, which is what you're going to be doing.
And honestly, all this would be fine, because like once you can do 88, you can do 240 or whatever.
Yes.
320, whatever. You can
dodge
that
a wrench,
many.
You can dodge a ball.
Exactly. But the problem is that none of these fucking storefronts allow you to automate uploads of assets to the store.
So it's still the case.
It all has to be manually fucking uploaded.
Yeah, they handle them all differently. So if you're uploading your screenshots on Steam – on the back end, it actually – you can think about it in terms of a column versus a row.
Yeah.
So you got your language for – a column.
So you'd be like, here's all my German screenshots.
Right.
Here's all my English screenshots.
Now, if you organize your folders like that, when you go to Steam, guess what? No. It actually goes the other way around. So on each screenshot, you just have to drag in the rest of the screenshots for the other languages. So it's actually in the horizontal column row. And so it ends up being the case where depending on which one you're on, then you have to just upload them differently. So it's just it's just a nightmare.
Yeah. So I built it. My whole Wednesday was building a tool that does a thing where you press a button and then a little message pops up and it's like, what do you want to name the screenshot? So it freezes the game. So maybe you're doing a cool flip. Maybe you're shooting a face blaster at a thing or a
rebound.
Whatever it is you're doing, the game is frozen there. And then you name it. So you say, I'm shooting a bad guy. That's the name of your screenshot.
I'm shooting a bad guy there.
You press OK, and then basically you have to sit there.
For I think it's 5 or 6 hours.
It takes probably 15 seconds because it goes through all the different resolutions and aspect ratios. It'll resize the game, and then at that resolution, it will change language, screenshot, change language, screenshot. Mm-hmm. And it just does this. And so all the interfaces have to be updated to be fully real-time dynamic.
Because that's also not very efficient. So it wasn't originally designed to do that, because swapping out languages also can mean when you swap to like CJK fonts or CJK language, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, they have to also have to swap the font, which is a really heavy resource swap.
Yep.
So Seth designed it to preload everything originally. So you had to go through and make it so that
– during this process.
But only during this process and not normally, because otherwise –
so this was a huge project. But now it's the case that now – we can take 88 screenshots with a single button press and have literally every screenshot or every version of that screenshot that we need.
What we can't do is then click one button to upload all of them, which is not our fault, and I'm very angry about it. So stupid.
Maybe GameStudios wouldn't have to crunch if the platform backend was provided so terrible.
This is that 6 months of crunch. That's uploading screenshots. That's like when you hear about, you know, The Witcher's last 6 months of development. Yep. They were just getting screenshots ready. That was that was what they were
100%.
Doing. 100%. Yep. So we're doing all these things. Adam is working on our localization tool.
Yeah, we discovered this week that due to a miscommunication about how the localization API that I made works, that when things have been changed, we weren't detecting that fact. Right. So, as in like the English –
things meaning English words.
Yeah, English words. So the English phrases and strings kept on changing as Seth would rephrase something, or we would change the name of something. Like we changed crowns to ribbons and did this other stuff. So the English would change. But then there was no indication that that had happened. So our localization team couldn't possibly know
since April.
Since the dawn of time that we've changed these things. They haven't been retranslated. But because of that, we didn't actually know which things, right? Because we didn't know which things that
probably
were.
You're like, shit, do we have to redo all of it?
Yeah. Because the question is, what point was it when it was translated?
Yeah.
Because we actually don't.
Well, and we
know that.
So that was part of it. And then the other thing was in the process of developing the screenshot tool. We all of a sudden had a very easy way
to rapidly see
and capture how every interface looks in every language.
Yeah.
We discovered that some of them look real bad.
Because, of course, different languages have different lengths of words generally for, you know, the same concept in something like English. And so a lot of the times we hadn't been putting character limits, giving character limits
we
to
hadn't
our translation
informed
team.
Our translation team of – we basically told them to keep stuff concise.
Yep.
But that was the only guidance we gave them.
So if you want to see a good one, flip your level head game over to German and go to the marketing department.
Because look at tips.
Because in the top right corner, it's supposed to say tip size. And then
the word in German for tip is like, I think, three or four words shoved together.
I think it's four.
Yeah.
So the word for tip, which is three letters in English, is probably like 25 letters in German. So it actually gets so long that that button covers the rest of the text in the marketing department.
Some would say not great.
Yeah.
Not great for launch readiness.
Not great.
So a lot of this week has been basically just going through all those things, doing these full audits of localization, fixing up these problems, coming up with ways to detect changes and actually fixing that.
Yep.
Going back and figuring all the things that we missed before.
Yeah.
Getting those flagged. So Sam's doing controls audit. I've been doing a lot of work on mobile. So it's just like basically I would say every single aspect of the game is like right there. It's it's super close to being ready, but none of it is
actually ready.
Yep. So that's just kind of where we're at. I mean, we're not crunching or anything. We're just working normal.
Yeah, well, it gets an important.
It's just a lot of little details.
There's just a lot of things happening.
Well, part of the reason why it feels, I think it's as far as that question of crunch, because most studios at this point would be crunching, right?
Yeah.
Which is you're a few months away from launch. I feel like I'm working hard, but I'm certainly not working more than 60 hours.
I'm not feeling panicked.
Yeah,
I mean, panicked.
I mean, we're like, here basically 9 to 6 with a 40-minute lunch break. So we're really not working much more than 8 hours a day.
Yeah. So we're keeping it under wraps, I think, with all this stuff. Keeping it cool.
The heat will turn up as time goes on, but I think it's not going to be too bad.
It's mainly the stress, though, that actually turns up, but less so than the actual work. Because like we do – I mean, like all of us recognize like after usually around 6 p.m., if we're still here, then people start – just losing their marbles, right? Because it's just too long. It's just too fucking long.
Like we know we were supposed to leave, so we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, so lots of things happening. We'll have more reports. As far as launch date goes, we are narrowing things down.
Yep. Yeah. We know within a sort of a few week span.
Yeah.
Where we want it to be. And it lines up with one of our sweet secret business moves, basically. And it's still – there's still just enough uncertainty about the sweet business move.
Yep. Can't announce yet.
We have to hold off on an actual date.
So everything is looking real good, and we're just now in the phase of making sure that given all the work that we've done to sort of create all of the scenarios that need to happen for this game to get tons of eyeballs on launch, that all those people stick around.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at.
Yep.
Okay. Let's talk about Meg Absorbing.
Yes. So okay. I think last week, last podcast when we talked about the production problem.
When was the last podcast? I don't remember.
Didn't we talk about it? It was like it
we
was
did.
Ages
yes,
ago.
We talked about our the fact that our Trello system made collaboration quite bad.
Yes, and we've been pushing toward more pairing and more collaborative work in general as a studio, and that's including to make sure that onboarding of new people, or basically onboarding of existing people into new roles inside the studio is a much slicker and just kind of enjoyable process, as well as just bringing the quality up on everything. So. What we did was we combined all of the boards into the Megazord board.
The Mega board.
Mega board, which is – I guess I should call it the Megazord.
Yeah.
Megazord. And so that has everything except for the level head stuff on it. And the reason we have kept that separate is because we realized basically there is definitely a volume limit in terms of just how many cards can be in a thing before the production meetings are not as useful. And – the level head board tends to be the place where there's just too many new things coming into the pile every single week. And so what we changed there is actually Seth and I now meet every single morning and for about 25 to 30 minutes go through the always somehow 15 to 35 new cards in the inbox. That's again day by day.
And this is, by the way, with us constraining the number of cards coming in now.
And then we prioritize everything based on our priorities. We have a Trello board that is just called priorities, and it's just sort of essentially the order of operations on a very high level for everything we need to get done. And then we come up with our list for Seth and I basically for the day based on all those priorities and the other production meetings. And the whole goal is that then when we have our production meeting with the whole team, we're not actually going to really be going over level head stuff too much, basically at all.
We'll just know what the general goals are with level head, and that informs everything else, but we don't need to go through all the details of level head because there's too many of them.
There's too many
for the whole team to worry about.
There are many.
And so we're going to try this little twist of things. There's a couple other minor changes, but for the most part, then we're able to actually see for everybody, basically except for Seth and I, we're able to actually see where all of the various collaborations are coming in. It's been most interesting for Adam because most of Adam's time actually has been on collaboration these last
– yeah, there's a lot – a fuckload of more stuff on the board than I thought there was.
Yes.
Because you couldn't see it all before.
Yeah, my face is on like a jillion card.
Adam's always like, I'm just in the web dev board. You know, it's just like
– I was like, my board's – I got nothing.
And then at the end of every week, he's like, I got like 4 hours in maybe on this like big project we're working on. And we're like, what happened? Turns out
all the stuff that we planned happened.
Just couldn't
so
see it.
Now we're actually able to then see all those things. The goal then with this next one next week is to, when we're actually able to spot all those collaborations, is to actually order them, make sure that Adam has enough time to work on his own web dev stuff around those things we prioritize based on
that. I think the main problem I've seen with this so far is just that Trello has a very weak search capability.
Correct.
And that – you can search – you don't have the option of like doing inclusive versus exclusive searches and that sort of thing. So I can't, for example, just look at the cards with only my face on them.
Meaning that nobody else is
– yeah, just stuff that I can do by myself. There's no way for me just to be like, let me see the stuff that I can do by myself. But
you know, Trello has an API, so
– they do, yeah.
Maybe we make our own Trello.
Yep.
You know, they use that Trello. We put a Trello in our Trello.
Mm-hmm. Put a Trello in your Trello.
Yes.
Yep. We'll think about that.
So we'll see how it goes.
It's been good. I mean, I feel like we've been moving quite fast. We've on the level head board, we've burned through anywhere between 20 to 30 Trello cards a day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
Importantly, that's how many are coming in.
It's actually slightly more.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah.
We're operating at a deficit. It's good though.
Yeah. I'm actually – so I'm – well, it's because I'm also on a
– once I don't know.
I'm on a 5-bug quota. Which is to say, no matter what I do on any given day, I also need to fix 5 bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because we have essentially – I think we have something like 100 whatever minor bugs.
There's a couple outstanding you might
– yeah, which is say. Like – it's essentially to say that any like, one of these is not going to ruin the experience.
Right. We can launch the game with all of them.
The problem is though is that it's clogging up our pipes because and also, they keep on getting just, brought up.
There's enough of them that if somebody experiences all of them, it could potentially make their game experience slightly degraded.
So the goal is basically if we can get everything done with the game and get all the form factors figured out and everything like that, then a lot of Seth's time is basically going to go strictly into bug fixing and optimization before we even bother with the first update planning for the thing. Because that way we can make sure that we're building on the stablest foundation available, which would be good.
Yeah,
because really going up to launch at this point, everything should be about process and performance and optimization. and just the ability to launch the game successfully.
And then not die afterward.
And then not die because the goal is to shore up the right system.
If we hit the launch button, then we should be able to then go, nice, and then just go out to lunch.
Yep. Yeah.
And then just it's the weekend, so we'll just take the weekend, come back in on Monday and be like, what's next? That should be how the launch yep. goes. Yep.
Realistically, that's not quite what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's never.
But the main reason that I mean, the reason that should not happen though is just because there are now so many people playing the game that we have to deal
we have
with
to hang
whatever.
Out and just see, make sure that everything.
What
is
does that mean?
Okay.
Yeah, because presumably as people flood into the Discord, we're going to have to do some like emergency Discord management. Presumably, as people start flooding in and leaving support requests, flooding in the feedback and whatever, there's probably some stuff we're going to have to figure out.
Yep.
The Could goal be. Is to plan that all ahead of time as well as possible, so that the only consequences we have are the unforeseen ones
yes.
due to the sheer number of people.
Yes.
And everything else should go fine.
Yeah, that's your plan. I'm just going to leave. I'm just going to hit the launch button and
the thing is,
march
we probably
on out.
Could, you know?
Oh, yeah, you always can.
Yeah. Walk away. Just let chaos reign.
Let it burn.
You know? All right. And as far as industry news, Sam, you went to DICE.
It was so good. I rubbed some elbows.
He just went in there.
Rubbed people's elbows and left.
He slathered up some lotion on his hands, and he was like, who's got dry elbows?
Yep, let me get in there.
Yeah, I saw a lot of tweets from creeped out people.
They were like,
this random guy in a butterscotch shirt
keeps
just
lubing up my elbows.
Yep, some people appreciate it, some people don't. You know, but
it's those people who like versus don't like dry elbows.
There you go.
Know?
Yeah.
So any key takeaway you feel like our listeners should know?
Mostly it's not meant to be shared. Publicly, because it's all basically just, you know, shop talk between
But you did
individual
ride
people.
A go-kart.
I did go go-karting.
So that's probably not under NDA.
No, that's not under NDA. That was very fun. Very strange, because you have just the people on the track are making just all the stuff and have made all the stuff. And I'm like, if I hit you real hard and you die, what happens?
This is bad.
This is so
I hold
bad.
All the power
yeah,
it's, to shape the games industry
yeah,
on
it was
this
a
track.
Weird, yeah, that was a weird... Weird, fascinating thing. Yeah, it was honestly, I think it was the best one that I've been to. This is our third time going. And it's funny because most of the companies there are companies operating at scale. And so mainly yeah. AAAs or at least people who have, you know, 40 plus people in their studio. And so I really enjoy it because that vantage point that they have on what the industry's doing is a fascinating one. And helps us kind of key in, make sure we're doing what we need to do to strategize and stay alive for the next year or two. And so it was a lot of just really good discussions and that sort of thing, which are fun. But I did notice, and this is something that always bothers me, but just people not necessarily being good at, you know, like inviting people in, holding the space for anyone new who you don't know. Right.
You got your circle of people talking and you see somebody kind of float in
yeah.
and
they don't even,
you never.
Yep. Don't even
don't
assist.
Bring them into the conversation. Yeah. Just leave them out there to drift.
Yep. And so
yeah, that's a rough one.
It's still definitely a thing. I think we know enough people now where this was the first time where it didn't feel like that was, you know, purposefully happening to me anytime I was wandering around.
Yeah.
Which was nice. And there's enough people there, but I know that sort of running into people is really fun. I always try to do a good job of actually for people I don't know. You just make eye contact with them, like you're talking to them now. That's your job.
And so that's what's
you got to make them have a good time, learn about them, send them some follow up notes and that sort of thing. And so it's always fascinating to me that despite the fact that that biz dev is one of the minor functions that I perform in the studio and that our studio does generally, like we don't have a dedicated biz dev person, that people are not made to feel more welcome when talking to people at things like industry conferences. So that's just sort of a general note. That always bugs me.
It's a social skill that
it is. Yeah.
I think there's a handful of life skills that would be really fucking great if there was any kind of focus on this at all mm-hmm. during school. Right. You know, as people are growing up,
doing taxes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Basically, yeah. Taxes,
socializing, having healthy relationships.
That's yeah. good. No one teaches you that.
And
no.
yeah, having healthy relationships. And there's stuff like. Negotiating.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Never had a class on that. Nope. Turns out it's probably the most important thing you can learn how
yep.
to do in also, terms of advancing in anything.
Not that hard.
It's not that hard.
Nope.
That, well, part of why it's not hard is because nobody knows how to do it.
That's
nobody
true.
Was taught.
There you yeah, go. Yeah. So maybe we should just keep it this mm-hmm. way.
But I think the other big takeaways that are general enough that they're not secret mm-hmm. are basically just that no matter the scale of the operation you're looking at,
Yes.
They basically don't know what they're doing.
Yes. That's yeah. I mean, that's why it's so fun.
It's pretty hard for everybody.
Yeah. It's like everybody is struggling, and also everybody's freaked out about what the future holds. No matter how long they've been successful, no matter
– or if they're currently at like a – feeling at the top of their game.
Yeah.
If you're doing a good job as like a – as a
– well, then you got more to lose.
Exactly. As a business leader, you're like, but what about – yeah, what about in 2 years' time? Like, what does this all mean? And so, it was very fun having those discussions. And then, just seeing – just recognizing that, you know, as we talk about on the podcast, you know, this last week we completely changed how our production meeting works because we're like, maybe this is better. And realizing –
we don't know what we're doing either.
Yeah. We don't, exactly. Everyone's just trying to do slightly better all the time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you take a step forward. Sometimes it's backward. But seeing it happen on these big scales is always kind of comical, right? Because it's like a 160-person team, using the same production method and stuff is like a big – that's a big change all of a sudden. Change management has to come into play, right? And so everyone's change got the same management. Problems. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like this things like DICE or GDC is basically – we all spend a year just being like, what about this? Is this game dev? And then we go – and then we go to GDC and somebody else is like, well, I've been doing it like this. Yep. What is this good? Yep. And then some third person comes in and like, I don't know. I've been doing it completely different than you guys. I've been doing it like this. And then we all kind of walk away more confused.
Yeah.
That's game development.
And probably every industry.
Honestly, yes.
There's no way that any industry has its shit together.
No.
And I'm excited too because I got some feedback from Adam and Sam about my GDC talk, and I've gotten it to a point my one about DevOps. Mm-hmm. I've gotten it to a point where I feel like it's actually like before I was kind of like it's fine. Like I'm saying the things that I need to say, but I wasn't too pumped about the overall angle of the thing. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was like a core of it that was missing, something like really big. And so I got it now. And it's all about that problem of like, we're all actually pretty bad at our jobs in game development.
In games in particular.
But there are actually –
well, that's actually the confusing part is we're all really good at our jobs, like the job being the thing that we're doing, right?
But if our job is to make games and get them delivered to people
– we are not good at.
Yeah. As an industry, we actually don't have any reasonably decent practices around this. Mm-hmm. There's no standardized best practices. Like the fact that basically every AAA company is in a crunch panic pants shitting death march for the entire like 6 months to a year leading up to every launch.
And then still launch buggy software.
And then somehow, despite working that hard with 1,000 people, not delivering the thing that they were trying to do, to me implies that there's a problem.
Some would say.
Yeah. So that's basically what my talk is about, is that exact thing. So I'm sure we will have a lot more interesting conversations at GDC about this. And I am probably some people aren't going to like what I have to say.
I think you're
going to
curdle some people's milk. That's what I think is going
to
happen.
So if you're coming to my talk – leave your milk at home.
Yeah, leave it at home
because it's going to curdle.
Yeah, unless you like cheese.
Yeah, then you're good.
Then you're doing great.
Yeah. All right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. We have two related questions.
What are they?
Highest voted question comes from the Dead Earth Man. Since moving into vegetarianism, how much has your consumption of eggs increased to maintain protein intake for muscle mass? This is directed at me, I suppose. And then Woland 77 says that Sam, you claimed you don't eat animals anymore. Maybe they're thinking about me though.
Yeah.
But what about eggs? Oh no, this is because you eat eggs a lot.
Yeah.
So this is just a confused question. I don't know. Eggs, they're gone. I ate all of them. Sam, do you still eat eggs? If not, what did you replace them with in your protein-powered workout diet? So of course you still eat eggs because –
of course. I mean I still eat meat too. So I'm much less on the full vegetarian train.
So I basically landed in – I don't know if there's a name for this because I am still eating meat but not on purpose.
Well, I think you're
– you're vegetable forward.
You're a vegetarian of convenience.
Yeah. So basically
– more like a carnivore of convenience.
Yeah. So basically I don't buy meat. So if I'm at home buying groceries, there's no meat in the house. And there just hasn't been for
like 6 months.
Since October. Yeah. So like 4 months or something. It's been fine. I've just been buying the fake meats. So Morningstar burgers, Beyond burgers are really good.
Corn.
Quorn. I got Quorn makes this like it's Q-U-O-R-N, yeah. And they make this ground beef thing.
It's good.
It's really fucking great for making spaghetti meat sauce.
Ooh.
So like you just replace the beef. So yeah. The interesting thing is my diet hasn't changed in the sense that I'm still eating the same foods. I'm still eating burgers and spaghetti and right. everything.
The meat has just been substituted.
The meat, yeah, just you just swap it out with this stuff and it's delicious and it works great. And it actually has a similar kind of a protein content as something like beef does.
Yeah.
So basically nothing has changed. I do eat eggs because they – are eggs.
Yep. I always buy the free range eggs.
Yeah. But I haven't ramped up my egg intake either. So I'm kind of just like I'm trying to just throttle things down. And then if I'm at a restaurant, if they don't have any like good protein options that are vegetarian. So basically if their vegetarian thing is like a piece of lettuce and that's their vegetarian thing, then I'll just get a burger. Because my nutrition is more important than strict adherence to this diet. So that's kind of where I'm at.
My wife and I have gone mostly just so there's an interesting idea for like an American culture in particular. And I can't remember the name. It's like carnivism or something like that. But it's the idea that like meat is the default, right?
Yes.
So my wife and I have actually switched to just where vegetables are the default. So we're not vegetarian. It's just that
The dominant item.
The dominant one is actually
some kind of plant.
Yeah, so most of our meals don't have meat in them. We do eat a lot of eggs, but then I always go for like the free range, you know, that stuff. But just that and it's the funny thing about it. And actually, so for me, this started a little bit earlier because back when I had my surgery on my throat, where my stomach was stapled around itself, around my esophagus.
Yeah, we've all been there.
It made swallowing difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so, especially right afterwards for like the following couple months. And I had to chew the ever-living fuck out of everything I ate to be able to get it down in where it was supposed to go. So, of course, if you ever tried to chew the ever-living fuck out of a steak, that is a terrible experience. Yeah.
But here's the important thing. Your jaw will get ripped.
It is. But here's the important thing is that in order to properly eat a thing, you're supposed to chew it that much, right?
Yes.
So suddenly I became very aware of just how bad of a job I was doing at eating things like mostly just meat in general, right?
Yeah.
And realized just how tough meat is. And then – so I started just kind of eat less of it because it was just it became a chore. But because it was also a chore and I had to chew it so much, I paid more attention to what it tastes like.
Mm-hmm.
And I had grown up thinking that meat was the most delicious thing in the universe. It turns out what's delicious is fat and salt.
Yes. Yeah.
And we salt meat and it has the good meat has fat in it. Like there's marbled. The other stuff too, right?
Yeah.
And so it turns out that was the tasty part all along. And that meat itself, it's just fine. Like a vegetable by itself is fine. But vegetables have a lot more like variation going on in terms of like the kinds of tastes you can get.
Kinds of flavors.
And of course, if you just put some fat and salt on those – then they're also delicious.
Or you just eat an avocado, which is a big pile of fat.
Yeah.
Put some salt on it.
Put some salt on it. You're done.
That's better than the steak.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah.
That's way better than a steak.
Yeah.
So I think that the vegetable sort of just the swapping to a vegetable preference, I think, is a really just good move anyway because it's better for you, better for the environment, better ethics, better, et cetera.
Cheaper.
And it's really easy. And I mean, it is actually better. Because meat, it's not that good.
It's fine.
It really isn't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just fine.
If meat was that good, then the top selling thing at McDonald's would just be a plain burger with no toppings.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead, you got to fucking slather that thing in special sauce.
And that sauce is made out of sugar.
Yeah.
You know?
It's then you the sauce that's good.
And you got to get French fries on this. And I kind of do want to go to McDonald's now.
Although I have found that.
Typing all those things.
Yeah, my wife and I are getting burgers this weekend. We're just looking forward to it.
But there are all these – from having to then explore – because the other thing that doing this where you switch your default, it makes you just explore stuff. It's like now you're exploring all these alternate – fake
I ate meat those products, right? Vegan corn dogs that you recommended.
Yeah.
The Morningstar.
Yeah, the Morningstar ones.
They were –
they taste exactly as weird and bad as a regular corn dog.
Amazing.
In the best way possible.
Yeah, if somebody presented these to me and they were like, I cooked corn dogs,
I
would eat it and I would have no idea that it was absolutely not made out of any kind
wild.
Of meat. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think – so one of the fun things about this is that it's caused me just to explore food a little bit more generally and just try more stuff. And so all in all, it's actually been a really good experience. I just feel like I've seen a lot more now.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just opened up your mind a little bit about like what else you could eat. That's literally it's like we went to here in the Cortex District. They had this big night out party where basically a bunch of different startups were showing stuff. And one of them was cricket based protein.
Yeah. Which was the rage.
Did you guys eat any of that? Because I did.
I did not. But
I didn't
was it good?
See it, I don't think.
Yeah. And I was like, I mean, this will take a sec, you know, for the world's going to take a while.
It'll take a sec.
To catch up to this. But
the main problem though with it is actually it's fucking expensive right now to get, to get like vetted either mealworm or cricket based food stuffs. Cause I went looking for it. Cause I was like, I want to start like adding this into my diet.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Is it expensive right now?
For now. Cause the long-term sort of advantage of it is that it's potentially dramatically cheaper to make.
Yeah, it is. Right? And in fact, also everything about it. Cause like the crickets live in the dark. You know, turn fucking lights.
You have to run a light, and they love it down there.
They like
and
they eat trash.
They eat trash.
What?
Yeah.
Turn your trash into meat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You turn your trash.
You solve two problems at once. You have one of these companies just go take over a landfill. Boom. Now you've got infinite cricket food.
Which again, kind of disturbing. You got to get over it.
You just grow a trillion crickets, turn that trash into protein, and that's delicious.
One trillion crickets, I'm pretty sure, is like a burger list. You got to, there's a lot.
Yeah. You got to
make a lot of them there. You know what I mean?
It's a lot. So, but you got a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fine.
So yeah. So it's a fascinating. Yeah. It's one of the things you kind of opened up your idea about what you could do. You know?
Yeah.
It's just fun.
Adam, you ate a scorpion once, right?
I did.
That's dope.
Yeah. It tasted like popcorn.
Oh, I did also want to mention, because you brought up Jenny, her podcast.
Oh, yeah. So my wife has launched a podcast.
Yeah.
With her friend and like ex-colleague, sort of. They went to residency together after med school. So they launched a podcast where they talk about movies and TV shows and
the medical
but like the real context. Medicine sort of I guess the first episode is was about
Iron Man.
Yeah.
How does that heart thing work?
Yeah,
would it work?
How could this work?
How did you surgery in a cave?
Yeah. So they basically go into it with then their expertise from actually being physicians about what could possibly basically giving it the benefit of the doubt. Asking the question like if this was possible, like how could we make this work, right?
Well, first, so this fun. Clearly can't work, but let's just assume that.
But
it
talk
can.
About why.
Why? Yeah.
Like, why could this not work? And then, okay, now put that aside.
Oh, super fun. I was just cracking up about halfway through because they started referring to Tony Stark's the hole that he would have to have as a cup holder.
Which it is.
Uh-huh. Makes sense.
And then it kind of made me wish that there was a scene where they cut to him like watching TV, just kind of like laying back.
Slurping some
with like a smoothie in his cup holder, chest hole, just drinking out of it.
Yes, it was fascinating. It's called Doc's Watch.
Doc's
Watch, which sounds like Doc's Watch.
Yeah, and if you're into any of that sort of, you know, sci-fi fantasy stuff, and then also just people who are really good at something and know a lot of shit talking about it as if it's real because they're just having fun.
Yep.
It was it's a good time.
They've got a season of 10 episodes. They're spitting out one a week. Mm-hmm. So by the time this episode goes live, there will be two up.
Yeah.
So if you go to Doc's, like it's Doc like Doctor, Doc's, and then Watch like watching things, right? So if you just look for Doc's Watch, whatever you use to listen to this, unless you listen to it on our website, in which case that will not work, or go to docswatchpod.com, which is hard to spit out.
Too many syllables. It's good.
It's a
you're
lot of
typing
odds.
It.
docswatchpod.com.
DocsWatchPod.
DocsWatchPod.com.
Yeah.
So go there. Listen to it. It's very good. Fun.
Well, congratulations to Jenny.
Congrats to Jenny.
Launching very a fun. Podcast. Mm-hmm. That's cool. All right. Next question comes from Woland77.
A twofer.
Is math real?
Now we have to define reality, which
and
so
math.
Is the fun part.
This is the Here's shortest the question that's going to have the longest answer.
No, it's not because the answer is just yes.
That's true.
Because, I mean.
If it wasn't.
Well, it's not even if it just is, you know.
It is real.
You know.
It's real the same way that the letter A is real, you know. Like, sure, it's an abstract thing that represents stuff or whatever, and it's just an idea.
But ideas are real.
Ideas are real.
Because we believe in them.
Yeah.
Them.
It's like money.
Yeah,
money is real even though it's imaginary.
Yep.
And imaginary numbers are real even though they're imaginary too. And but they're not imaginary in that sense.
Is math real to you if you don't know it?
Yes. It's impact. It's a force that's acting on you constantly.
But the math isn't acting on you.
I mean, it is.
Things that are describable using math do act on you.
You're getting hit by physics and cars and all kinds of stuff.
Physics, cars.
Because you don't know math. You don't know wind across the street. How do you figure that out without numbers? You don't know. You're getting hit by cars.
Exactly right.
But
If you don't know math, get hit by cars.
So yeah. It's not real to you, but you will feel it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to feel real.
You'll feel the consequence of it not being real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you mean if you mean is math descriptive versus like an actual part of reality, then I think the answer to that is no, it's descriptive. And then now we're done too.
So. Yeah. Get over it. All right. Next question comes from Chelosis. What is your second favorite breakfast cereal?
Second
skip
favorite.
Take that first one, throw it in the garbage.
I feel like in order to think about this, so I have you to go through
number
one.
Don't even think about
can't
it.
Can't go through number one?
If you don't already have a list of your top two breakfast cereals, which is the shortest list possible.
I'm going to do my top one.
Then I don't know what the fuck you're
doing. I'm
going to
do my top one anyway.
Does two even count as a list?
I mean, yeah. I put, as a programmer, I put one thing in a list constantly. So
all right,
you can have a list of nothing.
I put zero things in lists.
You're like, I'm just going to get this list ready.
Here's a weird question. If you have a checklist, but there's only one item in it, is that?
Yeah, it's still good.
Still great.
A list isn't defined by what's in it. It's defined by what it can do.
Yeah, that's true. It's defined by what it can do.
It's defined by its ability to.
It's not the size of the list.
It's the fact of it being one.
It's the fact of it being.
It's being a list at all. It's an open book. You know, it can just have things in it.
Or not.
Or not. It doesn't give a fuck. It's a list.
We really should put together some sort of a programming course, you know?
I feel like we are.
It might be
in real time.
Teaching data structures in this, you know, like, because it's really not that difficult. You just got to talk about it in a more fun way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Lists don't give a fuck. That's the title of the lecture.
Lists. And why they don't give a fuck.
Number one breakfast cereal. I'm going to say it anyway, despite the question.
Walk through it. You got to walk through
number
it.
We'll one, bleep it. Number We're one bleep breakfast it. Cereal is Honey Nut Cheerios with honey on top of it.
Yeah.
Number one breakfast cereal, hands down.
Mm-hmm. So your number one breakfast cereal is honey.
Well,
and the number two is Cheerios.
Well, this is all class one because my number two is Chex Mix. And the reason it's number two is because it's Chex, just like corn Chex, you know?
You're taking a bag of Chex Mix and just pour it in, you maniac.
Although, why not? But no, it's just regular Chex. And the reason is because it sucks and is absolute garbage as a cereal, which is why it's in the number two spot. But use it to make Puppy Chow.
There you go. Cover it in sugar.
Which is the best food in the universe.
So sugar is your number two.
Yes.
Sounds like.
That is actually number one.
Breakfast cereal is a dessert. Yes. As we've discussed in the past, breakfast is dessert.
That's true.
It's the dessert to sort of celebrate the end of the previous 24 hours.
Yeah.
To bring on the new day.
Mm-hmm. All right. Seth, what do you got?
So there's this weird kind of cereal called – it's called a Kashi.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kashi it's made of like random nuts and things.
Yeah.
It's
Dream Bark. I don't know.
It's weirdly good.
It's very fibrous.
Yes. And it's especially good for being – a non-children focused breakfast.
Yeah, that's true.
So the number two would be that with milk. Mm-hmm. Number one is that with half and half.
Yeah. Whoa. That's a dad move. Isn't it
you
a dad
ever,
move?
You ever put half and half in cereal?
Did you that die?
Shit is so good.
Yep.
It's so good.
Speaking of putting half and half in cereal, when I was at the grocery store, I saw duck fat as a thing I could just buy a jar of.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Mm.
And so for the past two nights now, I've made popcorn using duck fat.
Oh, yeah. How'd it turn out?
Fucking great. I use a mixture. It's a trio mixture of oils. I use ghee, which is, you know, that clarified butter that's got a little cheesy kind of a vibe to it. So it's ghee, duck fat, and coconut oil.
God.
That fucking trio. It is
duck fat.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Duck fat.
Anyway, speaking of just high fat things that make things better, yeah.
I think my second place would be mini wheats that are frosted.
Oh.
With bowl milk. Delicious.
What about with strawberries?
Yeah. Strawberries?
I don't need fruit. I'll eat it separate. Don't give me a weird dehydrated freaking strawberry. I just want to eat it.
I mean like a legit strawberry.
I mean, yeah. Legit strawberries that are nice and like, bleh.
Is oatmeal a cereal?
Technically, yes, because it is a cereal grain, right?
Probably.
Because wheat is a cereal.
Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah.
Then I guess my oatmeal egg is actually my number one thing.
That's your number one.
Well, I guess if I was
mine is toast.
Because I would actually eat cereal. So, because if I were to actually eat cereal, I would be eating Kashi. Like that's what – anytime I do have cereal, it's going to be some like, you know, adult thing that's going to make me regular. You know?
You got these adult problems.
I can't – yeah. Every time I've eaten cereal – any time in the past probably decade that I've eaten cereal, I've felt real weird about it. Because I know what's in it. It's yeah, it's a bowl of candy.
Yeah.
I feel weird just being like, I'm going to kick off my day with cake. Yep. Kick off my day with candy. For some reason, I'm still cool with donuts in the morning. I'm, well, I can swing.
They aren't hiding anything. A donut is, there's like, no lies, I there. Am clearly bad for you. Yep. This is here to have a good time. Like, we're here for fun.
It's not a muffin, which is basically a fake donut.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these Hawaiian breakfast donut. Foods. Yeah.
Anyway, all right, next question comes from Jablong Funko Gordy.
Is it the Crossfire?
Go-Go Power Rangers?
Yeah.
Is it Power Rangers or Crossfire?
Power Rangers. Did you guys watch the
Crossfire?
Crossfire. You get caught up in the Crossfire.
Oh, yeah.
It also might be more than meets the eye.
It's like the 90s.
It's 90s children's Saturday morning action cartoon.
Yep. Slash toys.
Song.
We had that Crossfire thing. Remember that shot in the middle balls? Mm-hmm. You just shoot. I don't know.
And they don't want you to get caught in the Crossfire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though the balls are moving very slowly, it wouldn't hurt at all. But it's kind of neither here nor there.
And you basically just spammed the shit out of it.
You literally just cook as fast as you can.
And there was really no strategy because your gun was fixed in place and you couldn't sort of slide it around.
But you could turn it, though. I mean,
you could turn it.
You could, but what could the other person – the other thing the other person could do is block your balls coming in with their gun if they're coming in right around.
They could try to.
That was it.
Well, you're not trying to shoot each other. You're trying to shoot this little puck that you're shooting across the thing.
No, they're not puck. No. It's little silver ball bearings.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a ball bearing,
like in a puck.
So yeah, you were trying to push a puck across.
Oh,
I totally forgot about the point of the game.
Yeah, you don't
just thought you were just shooting. I thought I was just trying to get all the balls on the other side.
That's true. There's a puck. It all comes back to the puck.
Wow.
It comes full circle or full puck.
It's funny that for one of the earliest games that we played, that we totally forgot the point.
Core function of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You find the part that's fun, and that's the part you do.
That's true.
Anyway, we're going to just ignore this question because we've already gotten what we needed to out of
the excellent.
I don't remember what it was.
Just kidding. I haven't even read it yet. Jablog Funko Gordy says, what book would you provide to someone random? No context, just one of your subjective favorites.
Someone random. So
basically, if I knew, let's say you can guarantee that they will read it.
And that they haven't read it before.
That would
be a real shitty.
Yeah.
And if there's someone random, they're probably.
I think this goes back to what we were talking about before, which is like, what are the things that you just wish everybody knew? Because that's essentially what you get to do with this. It's just like, give someone a manual for something that you think most people just need a manual for. Thanks for the feedback. It's one of the best ones, to be honest. Makes your life way easier. Makes your relationships better.
What about your negotiating book?
Negotiating books, fantastic.
Getting to Yes?
That's the other one.
I'd probably give everybody Mistakes Were Made, but Not by Me.
That one's also excellent.
It'd maybe make people clean up their shit a little bit.
Yep.
The Power of Habit.
Power of Habit, too. There you go.
It's the recognition that you're not in control.
And it's okay.
You're only in control of not being in control. So figure that part out, and then you're good.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. So we got Power of Habit, Mistakes Were Made, but Not by Me. Man, thanks for the feedback.
Read those, someone random.
Yeah, random.
Next question comes from Butterscotch Atheist. What is the B-Scotch employee training like? Is it 5 hours of package delivery guides?
Heh. No. But it is. So what we do is we build it into our production schedule. And so as you – basically when you – your first week you're in, you're essentially only doing training the whole 40 hours. And
you're
that includes
reading books.
So we assign books, we assign videos, we assign articles, and then we also have interviews with the team about various things. So
we have shadowing.
Yep.
You'll
come program with Seth for an afternoon, program with Adam on some tool stuff, sit down with Sher and learn how the Switch works with our games. And literally it's all about
context building.
Yep. You visit every single piece of the operation to build context about how our studio does things and then also learn about how the industry at large does things so you can understand what makes us special.
And of course, you're also going to have a variety of training tasks related to your specific work that you would be doing, the kind of thing you'd be doing. And that over time basically slowly tapers. So at the beginning, you're just doing context building and learning. Mm-hmm. And then over time, the hour allocation for those things starts to go down until eventually it's, half your time is training and half your time is production work. And then eventually we Zeno's paradox it, and by the time you get to the end, you're, training for 6 minutes a day, mm-hmm. which is probably enough.
Doing some reps.
Yep. Just to keep it fresh.
Yeah, I think in the case of both Jordan and Sampy are the ones who we actually put through this method. Was it like 8 weeks?
Yep.
Total before all your training is done. And again, yeah. as you get towards basically after a month, you're at like, I don't know, maybe 15 hours a week, 10 hours a week of doing it, yeah. doing training stuff.
Yeah, and then like three quarters.
It just starts going down.
Yeah. Really. So the goal of it is basically to ensure that we create the time and the space to learn and get sort of familiar with how everything works without the pressure of having to deliver stuff immediately, right? So that it's just come in, here's the hours that we plan on you spending literally reading a book, yep. and that it's okay for you to come in to work and just
sit down and
read a book, like be at meetings and hear what's going on, read this book, do these things, and we're going to make sure that that's expected, that that's how you're going to spend your time.
Yeah. Although we have changed.
And you're not going to get a hard time about it.
Yep. Right. But we have changed our hiring practice to not hire people that can't do anything on week one.
Yep.
So that anybody, so this is true with both Sampa and Jordan, they were able to do stuff and contribute and feel like they were contributing and also be contributing literally on day one, actually. And that's kind of the goal moving forward is to have it so that training is more about context building and than it is about skills acquisition.
No, yeah,
it's not skills take a fuckload longer than 2 months to develop.
Yes.
And also way more oversight and guidance and that sort of thing.
Which is why you should have them when you come in.
Yep. Yeah.
At least some of them.
Some of them.
Yeah. Some of them.
The core.
The core ones.
Yeah. All right. Next question comes from Dr. Hayes. We have two related questions. So we'll see if we can get these quick, then we'll get one more, but these might be the last ones.
Let's do it.
All right. Dr. Hayes says, art process questions for Sam. Is there a particular palette that you try to stick to? Particular levels of brightness or saturation? Do you sketch on paper first, or is it Inkscape all the way? And Beaky Bopaboob asks, how do you pick colors for new things in Levelhead so everything looks nice together? So we got kind of like question like color palettes.
How do you
think about those?
So color used to be really hard for me until I went through this probably 6 months or so where I was watching a lot of different artists on YouTube. They're talking about how to draw this or how to paint this or whatever else. At some point, not even in a color related one, someone showed with the wheel how they pick colors. And it cracked me up so much because it was such a simple thing to do where basically what you do is you do a thing called hue shifting. Which basically you pick your actual core color. So say an object is red. So all you actually need to do is pick the red. Like that's the main hard thing to do. What color should this be in the context of all the other things? Pick that main color, and then all of the shades that come off of that and all the highlights that come off of that are basically they're just derived from that color you've chosen in a very simple way, which is if it gets brighter because it's a highlight, then you move the wheel toward yellow. Okay, so the wheel's a circle, right? So you move it up toward yellow, whichever side you're on.
Because it's bright.
Yellow is the brightest color, okay? So from a value standpoint, pure yellow is the brightest thing. From a value standpoint, pure sort of like blue is the deepest. And so then what you do, you move it up toward yellow, and then you basically desaturate it a little bit. That's it. So you sort of click in the box. And you just do that again for the next one. And then you have two steps of highlights. And then you do the opposite for the bottom, where you move that base color that you chose down toward, swing it toward deep blue, make it maybe a little more saturated.
What you're saying is, if you want to learn how to make art, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. It's already there, so just use it.
But choosing colors is extremely hard, especially at the beginning of a project. Because, of course, they're all – and we've talked about this in the studio a lot – because they're all referential. And so anything that is around a color will change the appearance of that color. And so you have to be – the beginning just is a pain in the ass because you only have like – you're like, oh, I like this one. And then you pick another one and it changes what it looks like. And you're like, shit. And then you pick another one and then now the whole thing looks a little different. And so that initial phase, I use a combination of things. I'll either just go looking on Pinterest for color palettes that I think are good, literally. Mm-hmm. Not by searching for color palettes, but just by looking at, for example, concept art or paintings. And then just take it.
Exactly. You can
just color drop it.
Yep. Eyedropper, the sort of the foundational colors out of it. Yeah. Boom, we got a color palette.
Yeah, if you look at the B-Scotch website, every color on there I just yanked out of our original Crashlands box art.
There you go.
That was how I chose it.
Yep.
Adam was like, this is nice. I'll just take it.
Some other artist out there, in this case Eric Hibbler, but some other artist out there knew how to put some colors together.
Yep.
Or at least put some colors together that I thought looked nice, which is probably more precise.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'll just
So this is the deep secret of the art world, is that Adam stole the colors from Eric. Where did Eric get them from?
He probably stole them from someone else.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that person got them from somewhere else. How far down?
I'm sure the string there of was color theft.
The rainbow.
Yes, I think it's there's no shame. Like I used to put a lot of pressure on myself to, for some reason, be able to self-generate beautiful color palettes by choosing, you know, five of the 256 million colors out of just thin air, which is fucking dumb, honestly. Yeah. So
I think a lot of artists will just take a photograph they really like.
Yeah, or literally, that's what you do. It's just creative. You use it as a creative jumpstart, right?
Yep.
You shouldn't be spending hours figuring that out. If I just look around and find one that looks cool, I'm an eyedropper it and get going. Yep.
Okay. Well, we can do one quick last question from Devo, who says, when I sent out beta keys, I swear I did everything right, and I still ended up in people's spam folders.
Yeah.
I know you talked about it in the past, but what can I do to make sure I show up in everyone's inbox? And do you still use Mail Merge for Google Sheets, or have you moved on to another service?
We do use Mail Merge for our press keys and stuff. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been problematic at all in terms of not going to spam, but I don't know.
No, I'm not sure.
Honestly, don't know why.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's all set up for that thing specifically. I will say there are some things about how you set up your email. So if you just do some Googling around, like the things to look for are DKIM, which I don't know what the fuck that stands for. There's DKIM, and there's a few other little things that you need to have set up properly on your domain's DNS records, which is a lot of just acronyms are thrown out there. DNS records are like, we own bscotch.net.
Yep.
The record says that the three W's.
It's six V's.
Oh, yeah, six V's. Points to this specific server that lives on Amazon or whatever, right? So that's what sort of DNS management is. So that there's like a place, if you own your domain.
Yep.
There's a place you can go to, your registrar, the thing that sold you the domain.
Either like GoDaddy or Google or
someone. And I hope it's not things. GoDaddy.
I mean, you know, that's
and
just
Google's
one
great. So that's what I would suggest. But wherever you are, and you can also transfer domains. So you can do that. But we basically just have to set it up. There's a handful of things. If you get those things wrong,
yes,
then the assumption from every mail provider or I guess mail client out there is that you are a dirty, dirty spammer.
Yep.
And this is
so dirty.
And this
so
is spammy. Bad or whatever.
Scam likely.
So there's that. So that's a big one. The other one is that the actual way the content is put together matters a lot, like a lot more than you'd think. And there are some tools out there we've actually found.
There's also certain keywords that will
kind of
just immediately put you in spam.
But again,
it's hard to tell which one.
It's not very reliable.
Yeah. So we used a service called Glock Apps that we were using to kind of basically check to see if we were going into spam. And it frequently would say we were, but then we weren't. So we don't really know anything. And it's also changing constantly. So
because it's a combo of all of that stuff. So like your DNS things being correct, the thing you're using to send mail, properly signing things, doing all that stuff. So using a reliable service. So it's a combination of a whole bunch of stuff and the content you're sending and your sender reputation.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that is done by each client. So like Google has a particular reputation for bscotch.net, for example. And every time we send an email, whether or not the person opens it, if they mark it as spam, or if they interact with it when they do open it or whatever, all those things basically count towards or against our reputation. And so we've been building our sender reputation over now like
seven years
or whatever. And it has been a roller coaster nightmare of a ride. We're now in a spot actually where we can very reliably get our emails in people's inboxes, but it's taken a lot of time. And the cool thing about that is that our reputation from sending like the Ballyhoo, which now goes to 60,000 people, whatever it is, that makes it easier for us to send our regular emails to people also. Which is all to say,
it all feeds back.
It all feeds back.
It's a continuous delivery problem.
It's a continuous delivery problem, and it's a really, really hard one to solve, and especially if you're doing it very rarely. So if you're sending large amounts of emails very rarely, then you don't get to build a sender reputation, and everything else becomes far more important. So the main reason that like these services that say, oh, you're going to spam, the main reason they say that is because they send it to random test emails, like not to the people that you normally email and that sort of thing. But in your situation where you don't have the opportunity to build up that reputation, you might want to go try those test services.
Yeah, it might work.
And see if you can find some things you could do better. Because like things like malformed HTML, if you're using HTML emails, like
too many big pictures.
They, pictures, wonky those, capitalization. There's all kinds of stuff.
Some words, they're just like, we hate this word.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Yeah, those services, I mean, it will identify those like big, egregious things that will definitely send you to spam.
Well, you can think of basically everything, because everything's being scored, actually. So there's basically, there's a spam checking algorithm that just basically tallies things up. As it goes through and it looks for features, and then every feature it adds, like, ups it some amount of score. And then if it goes over some threshold, it gets marked as spam. Mm. And some of those things are really impactful. And otherwise, often you're just like riding the line, which I think is where we were for a long time. We're kind of like, we were just on the line between spam and not spam. So it was in that case a matter of like, what was the fucking word that we had that?
Yeah, there's one that was wild.
Threw us over the edge. Yeah,
it was a word that shouldn't have even. I was like, what? This is a spam word?
It's like offer or something. No, it wasn't offer. It was like
opportunity.
Opportunity. Yeah.
You can't use the word opportunity.
Yeah,
now you're a scammer.
Yep, and the word free is also a tricky one, right?
In that case, it wasn't even in the context of offering you an opportunity. It was like, we found this opportunity to take the time to formalize some of these systems or whatever else, and it's like, spam!
Yep.
Yeah, so it's a nightmare, and we have spammers to thank for this. So if you ever meet a spammer in real life –
just punch him right in the mouth.
No, we don't advocate violence. Just say, fuck you.
Say, fuck you.
But so loudly their eardrums rupture.
Say puck phone. Yeah. Just yell puck phone at them, you know?
We're only down for sonic violence.
Sonic violence. Through just decibels. Yeah, the thing to
really – profanity.
Yeah, a lot of the reason that our jobs in any industry, but in this one, is so hard is because of all the assholes out there. Yeah. So if you ever think something you're doing is – when you know you're being an asshole, is not harming anything because it's just fine. Who cares if you're – stealing this or downloading this illegally or whatever.
You're taking grains of sand from the beach and there's just not going to be a beach anymore.
There's not infinite grains of sand.
Exactly.
Yeah. Someone's got to put them all back. Really, that's the thing. It's the other day.
Have you ever tried hunting down a single grain of sand?
So annoying.
Yeah. There's a whole department for that, thankfully. That's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Costa, for putting the podcast together, and thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we have links to everything. And also, please go to iTunes. Just get on your puck phone.
Yep.
Spin the puck wheel. Whatever it is.
Give us those stars.
Wherever you can give us stars.
Give us stars.
Give us those stars.
And then go find Doc's Watch Pod. And do the same.
Do that too. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.